this is confirmation, surely, right?
I think it is. I was anticipating this discussion with you guys and trying to come up with any possible argument that this is not confirmed at this point. Clearly, Shallan is doing her mental block thing because Chanarach is in the room and is her mother.
Has to be.
Has to be. And yet, only one crazy idea popped in my mind of a possible explanation here, and I don't think it's feasible. I think that one argument I could entertain as to how this is not her mother is if it's her.
Welcome back to Following Noah Donnis on my podcast. This week is episode 248, and we are in Wind and Truth, chapter 63, 64, and 65. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing great. More and more information getting dropped on us in chapters as we start to put the pieces together and get to sit in what I feel like are some iconic Stormlight scenes. So cool stuff.
Yeah, that's all Navani can think of during these chapters is like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm sitting right here. Paul, how are you?
Doing great. Brandon Sanderson did not leave us hanging for long. We can blame Tim for leaving us on a cliffhanger last week, but this week we get some more insight. We see our heralds. We meet all our living heralds. I get to tick off my bingo board. It's great. It's a good week.
It's true. Paul, do we have a patron?
Oh, yes. I'm glad you asked. We do have a patron. We have a new surgeon this week, and that is, without further ado, Breckies. I assume that means short for breakfast or breakfasts, plural. But Breckies, thank you so much for your support. You are on, it's actually a bucket. It's a little, we're recording this. This is like the day after Easter. So you're on a little Easter basket, actually, so I hope that is suitable. And fun fact, it is not waterproof. It does not hold water. It's actively leaking all over my desk, but
did
I have
you find
towels.
Out the hard way that it was not?
I knew ahead of time. So I've, if you're watching on YouTube, and the very start of this episode, you see me actively not looking at the camera or paying attention. It's because I poured water into this right before it started. And I spilled and I poured water on my desk mat as well. So it's thank you for your support, Breckies. We really appreciate it. And yes, thank you so much.
Thank you, Breckies.
Thank you.
All right, Elliot. Chapters 63, 64, and 65 of Wind and Truth. Can you summarize them for us?
I could try. We start chapter 63 in the scene with all the heralds as they're starting to do the oath pact, talk about how they're going to do this. Do we have all the people? We need 10. We got to find 10. Gliss, Renarin Spren, realizes that they can know what the original scene lines were supposed to be. So they can listen to what everyone's saying and know, they think, whether they're an imposter or they are the actual person in the scene. So they're kind of doing that throughout these scenes in these chapters. We cut over to Sigzil, who's fighting a Thunderclast in chapter 63, and a couple other battle scenes over there as they're fighting different types of fused. And let's see, back in our herald, Tanavast arrives on the scene, just steps into the middle of this conversation, honor himself here with the heroes. Well, in a vision. And spoilers, it's not actually him.
Also. Yeah, not really.
We'll get into it. Adolin does have his own bit of chapter 63 with some cool battle scenes as he charges through lots of enemies to save the other shard bearer that he's got on the battlefield with him. Chapter 64, more heralds, some Shallan point of view in this one, I believe. Yeah, more honor. Tanavast is kind of talking through the scenario. They're still trying to figure out, okay, do we have all the heralds that we need here? Kaladin and Zeth pop up in the middle of 64. More therapy discussions. Zeth throws out some one-liners that are pretty interesting to dig into there. And then end of chapter 64 is the reveal that Honor Tanavast is not actually him. It's Murray's surprise, and he comes after Shallan. They have a little battle in chapter 65. Formless appears, and more kind of big Shallan moments in chapter 65. But 65 ends with Dalinar going off and finding Taln with the rest of the heralds. And we kind of learn a little bit about pre-herald Taln. It ends with Dalinar getting his honor blade, which they're going to use as an anchor, and scene fades.
Thank you. Paul, do you have two words from those chapters?
I do, and they're incredibly petty. I apologize for my lack of thoughtfulness with these words. My two words this week are herald, for our heralds that we're seeing in here. Okay. Second word is bingo, because I will fight tooth and nail against Trevor if you try to tell me that we have not met all 10 heralds.
We haven't.
Quotes and proof. No. We could talk more if you're going to deny me my slot. Okay, we could talk more. But herald bingo. For the heralds we're seeing, all of them.
Show me and where in the book that Pylas speaks a line of dialogue.
No. It's meat. Not that she speaks, and they name Pyla whenever they name Pyla specifically whenever there's the scene that they are connecting to being connected to Tanavast by Ishar. It names Pyla specifically. So from Dalinar's perspective, right, that counts as we. Dalinar and or Navani's perspective, they have met all the living heralds, because that includes Videl, who is playing the part perfectly and according to the scene, and Pyla. It counts. I marked it. It's too late for you, Trevor. If you both are against me, I can unmark it, but I think this is sufficient evidence. They name her by name, and it is not, it is true to the vision. They have met, they have met Pyla.
We'll revisit this in a second. Elliot, what are your two words?
I do have thoughts on Paul's predicament over there, but I also have two words and a little conjunction article squished between them. My two words are among the gods, which is kind of self-explanatory.
That's this. Three words.
I was feeling the awe that Trevor pointed out that Navani is feeling in these chapters. It's not as epic as you might have guessed. I think Dalinar even thinks that. He's thinking, where's the throne room? Where's the choir of angels? You know, it's like, oh, we're just sitting in a dirty tent and making the oath pact here. But I was still every couple of pages going, man, this is the moment. There's so much that comes from the events of what we're seeing right here. And here we are seeing it like literally through the eyes of some of the characters in the scene. I was enjoying it. I thought it was really cool.
I also thought it was cool. I was also struck by the commonplaceness of the events, but having Taln just like as the stable master guy and saying, I don't want anything to do with you guys, go away. And then they talk him into it. He's like, all right, yeah, fine. You'll find someone. So it might as well be me, since, you know, I have a vendetta against cultivation. I didn't understand that part.
And honor, basically any god figure, because he's sad he doesn't have a weapon on him. Whenever,
yeah,
honor walks up, he's like, I cannot believe I've waited all for this time for this moment. And I don't have a weapon on me.
Yeah. Okay. We will take 2 minutes of a recess, and consider Paul's bingo slot. As a side note, you get your Adonalsium is mentioned more than 7 times slot, because Shallan mentions Adonalsium by name, and that was the last one you needed. and your other bingo slot that you're trying to argue for, we meet all the living heralds is the stated slot that you're trying to argue for.
Yes.
I have not met Pyla, Paul. You and I have not met Pyla.
Well, what were you doing in the scene while she's getting connected to... You're connected to her. Is that not enough?
Relaine is in her shoes, though. That's the problem.
But she's acting out the thing. So the argument that I'm making, I should clarify. The argument I'm making, this goes for Videl also.
Correct.
Is because, you know, we turn to Videl, who's, we know, as the reader, is Renarin. And we did that, and I thought it was going to ruin, because I thought before this episode started, before these chapters started, I thought maybe something, he wouldn't be able to play the part accurately. The vision would dissolve, right? But we learned that Gliss is able to feed Renarin. This feeds actually very relevantly into this first chapter. Gliss is able to feed Renarin the words of the scene, is able to kind of connect with the actual scene, the actual event that occurred. And is able to feed that to Renarin, and Renarin is now able to tell who's real, who's not real, by who is playing along with this. So, flip over to Dalinar and Navani's perspective. They are seeing Videl speak the correct words. From their perspective, they are literally meeting Videl, okay? And I think that is not arguable because, okay, we you know, like, we see a lot of perspectives, and that kind of helps me with this.
Your time is expired. Your time is expired. Elliot, what's your input?
I think Paul has a case.
Oh, dang it.
And not for the reasons he's claiming. I would be very on the fence of this. Even if acted perfectly, is this really Pyla and Videl? Maybe. But there's a line later on that I think seals the deal for me. And Paul, you're welcome for pointing this out. At the end of chapter 65, Shallan has battled Marais and gotten yanked out. And Pattern says this: Gliss and Tumi are resetting that part of the vision so Dalinar and Navani will find nothing wrong. Look. They glance to the side, blah, blah, blah. Shimmering, kind of hard to see. When Dalinar and Navani stepped in, all the chaos and blood had vanished. Others came with them, the heralds. I think that moment is actually even happening before the scene that we just came from, which was the Dalinar perspective of this scene. So I think Renarin and all of them left the vision prior to the final bit where we see Dalinar holding hands with all 10 of the heralds and them fulfilling the oath pact. So at that point, I think it is actually them.
I thank you for pointing that out, Elliot. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's a great additional point. I was going to say, I will say if there was some stipulation where like all of our characters are, you know, our characters we followed for a long time, including Renarin, had to meet all the heralds, this would not count. But like we, as in like us, the reader, plus any of our characters, through the eyes of any of our characters, have met the heralds. Yes, Dalinar has met all the living heralds, for sure.
All right. Elliot convinced me, for the record, not Paul's flimsy excuse of following the script.
I bet Brekkies would be on my side. I don't know
as if a side note,
Brekkies, but thank you. I bet you're on my side.
Brekkies, let us know whose side you're on. As a side note, Brekkies immediately jumped in the Discord and said hello to us. I'd like also to point out while we're on the topic that XMEX on YouTube, Paul, went to bat for you and made the argument that we've seen a massive anti-light field explosion when Marais blows up the portal to go into the spiritual realm. So you've actually, your bingo board is looking all of a sudden quite well, quite healthy.
It is, and I have to say a massive thank you. We were afraid that there would be some things that we've missed, and I'm grateful that one of the things we glossed over was actually on my bingo board. Thank you very much. So yeah, my bingo board is coming along nicely. Now I just, unfortunately, all of those are in different lines. I now have 4 spots marked off, but none of them are really coming together in a row. But there's hope, you know. There's hope.
It's all right. When Adolin and Pattern die in the same scene, then you'll be well on your way.
Or if Adolin becomes a Knight Radiant, then there we go. We're good. Golden.
Hey, that's talked about in chapter. Mm-hmm.
He is accused. He's accused of being a Knight Radiant.
He is. This is the first thing that's given me actual hope in that. So, you know, we might work. It might work. That with all of our bingo boards, it is really funny. Now we're like really about halfway through this book, just about. And all of these could easily not happen at all, and could easily one chapter could fill my board, or like, you know, get like 8 of them. Someone just needs to use Knights, Shades, or Rusts as an expletive, and Chris needs to be in a scene, and Cell needs to be mentioned, and then I've got like an awesome board, you know. And I think all of ours are about the same. Anything could happen. And there we go. So enough about that. Thank you, Elliot. And I'm sure all of our listeners are on my side as well against Trevor on this. Thank you to all of our listeners. My board's coming along nicely.
All righty. Chapter 63. Let's talk about Adolin first. And then we can go back and do some small details on the Herald scene that we haven't already covered in this discussion. As a side note, I've been very much appreciating, I know we've said this before, but I assumed around day 3 or 4 or so that Adolin's fight would go on for a couple days and then we'd leave him as a character. But he's really been quite the through character for this book, like this whole time, and we're approaching the end of day 5, approaching day 6, I think. So the amount of page time that he's gotten in this book, I've actually really, really liked. And we get this really cool action scene in chapter 63 where he sprints straight through all of the Singer lines to go save his shard bearer buddy. What'd you guys think?
I was thinking back to my diagram of the dome. Do you remember that? When we were seeing this scene, just to recall how big this space is. And when Adolin realizes that the other, I think it's an Azish shard bearer, who's on the far opposite side of the dome, is in trouble. And he realizes in that moment, there is exactly one way that I can get to him in time. And that is to charge through the entire Singer army. Straight across the dome. Don't have time to go around. Because the thing is massive, remember? Really massive. As large as the largest dome structure humankind in our world has ever built. And he's got to cover like 600 yards or whatever it was, 400 yards, maybe something like that, through an entire enemy army. This is intense. This is on par with like Charge of the Tower or whatever it was back in the Way of Kings.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Brandon writes it very well, this scene, as he breaks through the first line and then he actually like encounters Singers that aren't even looking at him. They're facing the other direction, and he can take advantage of that and calls back the momentum thing that Dalinar had back in Oathbringer and stuff like that, of like, move, don't get overwhelmed. So yeah, I really liked this Adolin chapter.
I absolutely agree. We are getting a lot of Adolin, and I would say not that mysteriously, but notably no Yonagon as of late. Which,
yeah, where'd you go?
I'm starting to think that, you know, there's Yonagon's character and the relationship that Adolin has had with Yonagon has been kind of along the lines of, do you follow your cultural role, or do you somewhat do something to be a good leader as you see fit, right? Like the mention of a king being one to lead his troops into battle is like the example that's given. And the culture that Yonagon is part of says, no, that's absolutely not the case. You must be safe. You are the one who needs to remain safe. But Adolin has kind of planted this seed of an idea, I feel like, in Yonagon's mind of a king leading troops into battle can be very inspirational for the troops, can be a real game changer in a war. I'm wondering if we are going to see Yonagon fulfill something like that by stepping in as a surprise to save Adolin instead of alongside, you know. I think that'd be pretty cool. That's my little 2 second theory as to where Yonagon might be. I think he's off to the side. Obviously he's not involved, but he might get involved, and it might be to save Adolin. That might be what saves him in some kind of catastrophe in the future. I do want to briefly mention, so we mentioned it a moment ago, that Abadai thinks Adolin is radiant, but is hiding it. Do y'all think there's any weight to this, or is this really a little bait and switch, make you think, oh, maybe something funny is going on here. Maybe he is a radiant. We know he has a special bond with Maya. There's no doubt of that. But to what extent? Or is this something else? Is he maybe invested in some other way? And that's what's being mistaken as maybe he's radiant, but he's hiding it?
So here's what I'll say on this. Notam shows up at the end of this chapter and follows him through the senior ranking or the senior ranks as he's charging straight forward and helps him. And they have a short conversation. When Abadai retreats and says, I can see that you're a radiant in disguise, that honor spren follows you around, blah, blah, blah. This was the first time that I stopped and thought maybe Adolin could become a radiant. Up until this point, I had never considered it as an actual possibility that Adolin could become a radiant. However, I think this is further exploring the unique relationship you can have with spren without bonding them, because he has that with Maya already. Notam is the guy that he went and saved in Rhythm of War, just like 1v5ing some other guys that were trying to kill Notam. I don't remember the scene exactly. But Adolin is... we're exploring interesting, cool relationships that aren't the Nahel bond through Adolin. And I think that will become a thing in the back half. I don't know where Brandon's in anticipating that going, but we're going to establish relationships with spren that aren't the Nahel bond or through Noadon or through the old Knights Radiant, etc., etc. And just to clear the point that you made, Paul, I don't think he's surge binding and I don't think he's invested. I just think he's that good.
I agree. We have nothing else to lead us to believe that there's anything going on. If there was, at least somewhere in these 4.5 books, we would have gotten a tip off or a hint or something. We've really had, it really has been that Adolin is uninvested and he's just a good sword fighter. He's all natural, you know? So I agree. I don't think it is. I feel like this is a pump fake that Brandon is trying to make you reconsider, or like you said, I really like what you said about exploring the relationship that the Alethi or a human or singer or whoever could have with a spren and not necessarily be bonded to the spren. Maybe even a way, I feel like this could transition in the future to some better practice that people have with shard blades, like dead spren shard blades. Maybe there is a way you can like have a greater reverence and relationship with the spren of that shard blade without, you know, not being able to have a bond, but being able to show reverence and things like that maybe as a good practice that they could have in Roshar in the future.
I like that train of thought too, because I could see it coming full circle, because wielding powers without Spren or not having the honor element of the bonds and things, that's where we started. That's where Ashen got destroyed. So if we could kind of bring it full circle back to a, here's how you can wield these powers and have relationships with Spren separately, I could see that having a synergy to it. No, symmetry. There you go.
There's a term that Nail uses talking to Videl about. So Renarin as Videl in chapter 63 gives the line of the script of, I'm really sad that all my people died. And then Nail says, well, you're not like a flame guardian or something like a flame defender, something like that. So you couldn't have done anything once the sky blew up. And I was like, well, hold on. They did have terms. They did have rules back on Ashen. They did have structure. It just, we just don't know exactly what it was. But yeah, anyway, back to your full circle thing. That was surge binding without Spren. Now I wonder if we could get Spren investiture powers without surge binding. All right, we have a very brief Kaladin Zeth section in 64 before we get to our Herald chapter that goes through all three chapters. So what'd you guys get out of this quick Zeth line of, you've shown me, Zeth talks to Kaladin and says, hey man, you're doing a great job. I really appreciate all the work you're doing. I now have enough autonomy that I have the strength to kill myself. Appreciate it. And Kaladin's like, what? Hold on, what? What'd you guys think?
It's like, that's somewhat moved forward. It's like taking Kaladin's advice in the worst way possible. You know, he's absolutely ran with it the wrong direction. You know, is this when Kaladin was like, yeah, I feel like we were making some good progress. And then Zeth fell into Shadesmar and fought two honor bearers and then like made it out alive and is like, not traumatized, but you know, like a lot happened and he's now totally shaken up and like, we have to go back several steps. We have to try to pick up the pieces again.
Yeah. I thought it was really funny when Zeth mentions to Kaladin of like, yeah, I'm considering redoing my fourth ideal and swearing to you instead of Dalinar. And Kaladin's like, whoa. That's not my point here. And Zeth just assumes that he's trying to like take control of Zeth and have him as a servant. Like that's been everybody else's goal that he's ever met. And he just makes the assumption that Kaladin is trying to like win him over to his side. I thought that was funny in a twisted way.
That was bizarre. And even though we've watched Zeth for a while and I should probably expect this, I did not see this coming. I was not expecting Zeth to like offer to swear fealty, offer to swear servitude to Kaladin. My impression is he doesn't really like Kaladin, like not that much. They're kind of starting to get along now. He's starting to see him a little bit better. He kind of views Kaladin as like this guy who's not very good at his job, doesn't follow rules that well. So I was very surprised to see this. Kaladin's still just trying to say like, hey man, you don't have to swear to anyone right now. Like you can be yourself. You do know better, whether or not you believe that you know better. Like you do.
And then Zeth had what I thought was a pretty funny comeback to part of that, where he says, my own conscience says I cannot trust my own conscience. and that kind of inverted on itself logic that Zeth appears to operate by.
Hey, at least he's being honest with himself.
He is.
He is. But Kaladin then like asks him to be more honest with himself, like to be honest with yourself that you are not this ruthless killer you view yourself as, right? That it's like you wouldn't have killed these people if you weren't made to do so. Don't, and he says like, don't even lie to yourself that you would like. It's actually an interesting, you know, conversation of Kaladin is like, those people would be alive if you were in control of the situation, if you had the choice at the time. And Zeth is like, well, but you're still dead. So like, what are you going to do about it? You know, like, I'm still a murderer. I still did these things, right? And got my head racing, got my head reeling, but Kaladin is doing a good job with this whole therapy thing. I feel like, in my opinion, it's quite the challenge. It's quite the first, client to have Zeth to be your first client. You know, try to make things make sense. Not an easy job. I could definitely say that.
Anything else on the Kaladin Zeth stuff? Alrighty. Back into 63, 64, and 65, our main scene for the episode. Our heralds are swearing the Oath Pact. And, man, I wish I'd written it down. The oath they swear is, I vow to hold back the darkness, I think is the phrase.
If you give me 60 seconds, I'll find it.
Okay. I thought it would be more paragraphical than that. I thought it would be a little longer than I swear to hold back the darkness. Because that, I feel like that's kind of open to interpretation, no? Like, I feel like there should be more terms here.
I understand that. However, I will say I think a lot of our oaths, which I don't know if this counts as an oath in the sense that we view them, like our radiant oaths. Not 100% sure how this fits in. I assume this is a separate thing. This is the oath to become a herald, like to be this immortal herald person. It doesn't quite play by the same rules, and I think it's natural that there's a little bit of ambiguity with this. I also think that vagueness allows for these heralds to become corrupted as they have been, as we see them modern day. If it was too specific, maybe things wouldn't have worked out. I'm not sure. Hopefully this bought enough time. Elliot, did you find the specific quote?
I did, and it looks like they each put their own tiny bit of spin on it, but the oath appears to be, I will protect this land, I will hold back the darkness. But then Tom adds, I will protect the people of this land, I will hold back the darkness. So they're all like a little bit different, but that's the gist of it.
We can go ahead and talk about Talon specifically. I think we learn in this episode why Talon didn't break and everyone else did. It's one of two reasons. There's two things that make him unique here. They talk about it. The first one, we need a guy who's of the common people, who isn't a big scholar or a king or, you know, somebody who really will look out for the people. That's Nail's argument. And then Tuln, as he swears his ideal, says, I will protect the people of this land, but not for honor. And I will hold back the darkness. So I think the Herald's breaking and going insane may actually be more tied to honor dying than I originally thought. And if honor's not included, specifically excluded from Taln's ideal, I think that might give him a lot more weight in 5,000 years. Not calling it that.
Wow. I see what you're saying, Trevor, and I like it. However, I don't think that there's any difference in their oaths, because Taln is definitely the most insane. The argument I assume you're making is that he's the one who held true, right? Like he's the one who held to the oath despite his state and how much torment he was subjected to. I feel like that's just still a testament to like his character and him being that this unique person of the people and things like that, rather than, I mean, I guess it would make some sense, but none of our heralds necessarily lost power. They just, our understanding is they just went insane due to this torment, essentially. It's a bit odd. One thing I also wanted to point out as we talk about Taln is I want to talk about Nail a little bit. Nail has been one of the more foremost heralds, way more so than I expected. They're like trusting him essentially to find the remainder, the last members of the crew. At this time, they said they were going to be trying to find two more heralds, right? Because Yezrin is telling himself that Shalash is not going to be his daughter. Shalash is not going to be a herald.
Right.
She doesn't need to be part of this. So they think they're finding two heralds. I assume that will play out more because we know who the 10 are. But finding Taln, like Nail is the one who's insistent, the one who's like, this is what we need to do, guys. And people more or less follow suit. I think Yezrin kind of backs him up. This is a good idea. And people get on board. But I guess I was surprised that they look to Nail for this, because in my head he was a minor adversary. I know we talked about this before, but I guess I wasn't thinking of him as a shot caller within the group, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with that. I guess I didn't give it much thought until you mentioned it, but yeah, it's interesting that Nail's the big pusher for Taln instead of, I don't know, anybody else.
And not to mention that he was right in his choice. Taln,
right,
over time, has seemed to be the most valuable herald, the most honorable, best herald, because he didn't break, right? Maybe you could argue otherwise. It's all a bit messy and complicated. But I think Taln is viewed as the heroic one, the honorable one in the story. And Nail's instinct was right. I'm even surprised to think that Nail was part of the breaking. You know, he's such a rigid, strict rule follower that it's hard for me to think that that'd be the case. But also, I mean, going through thousands of years of torment probably changes your mind, you know? So I understand. But anyways, I thought that was interesting how much of a role Nail had in these chapters and in these moments. I was personally surprised.
Nail seems very intent on doing the right thing. And it's so weird to see that coming from him based on the Nail that we're familiar with. It's very much a role reversal where we're used to Nail having this such a twisted take on what the right course of action is, to see him here in these scenes where he's the voice of reason in all of this, is quite interesting.
One other thing I want to point out, and this isn't something to dig too far into, but I really thought it was funny. I almost laughed out loud when, And I could be off on this. They've got a wide range of people within the heralds here, like a very wide range of people. So it makes sense. But Nail views Taln as a good addition as well, because it allows for contrasting opinions within the group, which I think is a great idea. But in my head, Taln is the only one who likely will have his position. And I was kind of thinking, if you're outnumbered like 9-1, I'm lumping all the other heralds in together a little bit. So it's probably not this linear. But my gut instinct was, I'm like, you have this kind of 9-1 split. It's kind of tough to add someone under the guise of like, hey, we want to hear a range of opinions, different perspectives. And it's a 9-1 difference. Like, I feel like that's kind of setting up Tom for a tough environment, which I think is what happened. They had the 9 left. Tom is probably an easy target for them to leave behind, in a way. But I just thought that was kind of funny. I think it was smart. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I thought that was kind of funny. I feel like everyone was on the same page. They're like, this guy will bring a wide variety of opinions, viewpoints. We'll move our viewpoints from 1 to 2.
What is up with Taln and cultivation?
Yes, this is my biggest question from this whole scene, I think, without a doubt. They just drop, again, almost casually, his soul is warped from his attempt to kill cultivation. And then Nail just goes, oh, yeah, but he deserves a second chance. Oh, okay, yeah, all right, let's go. And that's it.
My question, okay, is how is Taln still alive? If he went for cultivation and, you know, it was quite the event everybody knows about, how does cultivation still allow him to, you know, hang out?
And why? Why?
Yeah, this is certainly the biggest mystery for me. Like, it was quite a bomb drop. Be like, yep, here's Taln. Hey, Taln. Nice to meet you. He tried to kill cultivation, by the way, and he would totally try to kill Honor if he had the chance right now. I guess he's just not a fan of the shards. That's the only thing I can understand, is he views it as the shards as wrong.
Well,
I don't know. I'm assuming we'll get more insight to that.
I'm guessing it's going to be important that Taln is from Ashen. I mean, I guess they all are, right? No. Let me back up. Taln is from whatever other nation that Nail is also from.
Correct.
And there is some kind of alignment with the shards going on here, I think. Maybe we could piece it together if I went back through over it again, but I think one of these groups supported Odium and the other did not. And so
correct.
For Taln to have it out for Honor and cultivation could be he comes from the side of Odium originally.
Yeah, but I don't think that's true. And here's, I'll try to piece together what I got. Paul, earlier you were talking about how you see the heralds as 9+1, like everybody, and then there's Taln. I actually view it as like 7+1+1+1, and there's 4 teams, because Batar is doing her own thing in the modern day. Well, she's not really relevant to this conversation, so I would extract her. Nail and Taln are also doing their own thing, but not together. So, back to what you were just saying, Elliot. The Heralds, Yezrian and Shannarach, in a previous chapter, talked about how Odium was their god back on Ashen, and they were on the wrong side of that war. But they were talking in reference to Nail, and Nail was on the right side of that war. So, what I think is happening here is Nail, and by extension Taln, and Nail's people, Taln would be part of that, were against Odium back on Ashen. The rest of the heralds were with Odium back on Ashen. Honor shows up and gives them information that leads to the destruction of the world. That's information that we get in chapter 65. Because Taln accuses Honor of destroying Ashen, or destroying his people, his grandmother's home or whatever. That's a line that Tallon tells Honor. And Honor comes back with, I only gave the information so that that would happen. I didn't do it myself. So Tallon just hates all shards, hates power in general. Like, that's one of the reasons why he doesn't want to do this is, I've seen too much. I've heard stories of immortality. No, thank you. And they eventually talk him into it by the end of the chapter. But I don't think Tallon is specifically antagonistic towards cultivation or honor. I might be wrong. Or odium. I think he's just like, nobody should have that much power. Therefore, I'm going to do what I can so that is not the case. That's how I interpreted it. Is Tallon is just anti-shard in general. Anti. Nobody should have the ability to blow up the world. That's what Tallon feels like. And then Nail is doing his own thing. And then there's the rest of the Heralds. And then there's Batar. But that, she's not really relevant back in these days.
I think that makes sense. I think I follow all of that. Of trying to piece together Tallon's motives. I think that works. Do you want to hear my massive nagging doubt by the end of this chapter, though?
Yes.
There's one unanswered thread throughout this chapter, series of chapters. We discover that Tanavast is Mraes, which we're going to talk about in a second.
Mm-hmm.
The characters mention a couple of times, but where is Yatil? And that question is never answered.
I also
therefore,
noticed that.
Any one of these characters could be Yatil, Tallon, Yezrian, Nail. We're talking about all these characters as if they are them. Nail is so honorable, he's doing the right thing. Oh, Tallon is for the people. Any one of them could be Yatil not saying the actual things the original person said in this moment.
I guess because Renarin and Relaine aren't present by this time. They're gone. So they wouldn't be able, they don't have the cheat code script. So they wouldn't know. Correct. If someone's off script. Okay. I see what you're saying.
So I think we can base some logic on what these characters are saying, but got a little nagging voice in the back of my head going, ah, but one of these characters might be the Mafia or Werewolf or whatever version of that game we're playing.
You make a great point. I had all but forgotten Yatil at this point. But one thing I wanted to point out and ask as well, in our previous vision with Renarin and Relaine, wasn't Tanavast cutting it? They didn't know it was Mraes.
Yes.
Until he lunged at them and tried to kill them. Yes, so Mraes is playing along. It does have the script.
Right.
Do we know? Does Mraes have a spren? I don't remember if.
Yes,
he
does.
We know he has a spren. Okay.
So Mraes and Yatil both have a corrupted spren, just like okay. Renarin and Relaine do. So in okay. theory, they also have the script.
Gotcha. Okay, so in my for moving forward in my head, yes, they have the script, but they don't have to stick to the script. They could mess it up, especially knowing that if they know who is in the who's in the vision and who isn't. So that's a good point. That's a very good point.
Is it time to talk about Shallan yet?
I was gonna say I think that's a good point. So, speaking of Mraes, Mraes lunges, as Tanavast lunges at Renarin and Relaine, and they kind of get sucked out of the vision, and Shallan takes this as an opportunity as Mraes is going for those two guys. Shallan, as Radiant, is going and stabs Mraes with the anti-void light knife. But we learn a new mechanic here, which I did not know, is that it doesn't, basically the anti-void light in your system, basically in your bloodstream, does not kill you unless you try to consume or utilize Stormlight. You have to breathe in Stormlight for it to
combust.
Or, yeah, you have to do that. So he just kind of waits out the stab wound for a little while until the anti-void light is gone, and then continues on, which I thought was very interesting. Also, so this happens. Shallan stabs Moraes, I think, in like the arm or something. And then she also starts to hear from Formless in this scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to kill him and to kill Dalinar while you're at it. Lots of words of saying that Dalinar and Ivani are like her parents now. And because of that, that means she's going to hurt them. She's going to betray them. All sorts of things. She's really having a tough run with Formless in this chapter.
All right, it's time, finally time to talk about it. Yes, you're right, Paul. Elliot, you said something a long time ago. By long time ago, I mean like 3 months ago. When Shallan shows up in the first vision of them coming through the portal, Formless is just like there, randomly, just like freaking out and throwing a bunch of insults at Shallan. You are your abuse. Like, that's the only thing you amount to, or whatever she said. Elliot, you said, what if it's because she did see Chenrach, and that's why Formless is here? I think that just got way more merit here, because in this scene, we finally get it. We finally get a crumb of Shallan and Chenrach theory. Radiant talks to Shallan and says, hey, yo, we need to talk about why you made me take over in there. And Shallan says, yeah, okay, I understand. I'll confront it in a second. And then at the end of the chapter, she lets herself, quote, she lets herself see her and she lets herself cry. And that's after she's dismissed Formless. So this is confirmation, surely, right?
I think it is. I was anticipating this discussion with you guys and trying to come up with any possible argument that this is not confirmed at this point. Clearly, Shallan is doing her mental block thing because Chenrach is in the room and is her mother.
Has to be.
And yet, only one crazy idea popped in my mind of a possible explanation here, and I don't think it's feasible. I think that one argument I could entertain as to how this is not her mother is if it's her.
That's a fun one, actually.
Is if she is Chenrach. And I think that has some problems with it. I think there's some things that don't work with that. So I'm not ready to like claim that's even realistic at this point. But that's the only possible thing I could think of that is not Chenrach as her mother. I think we're there. 99.9%.
I agree. For the record, like, my serious note is, yes, I think we've known it and it's been understood enough for a while. And this was just a additional nod or confirmation. I definitely think that Chenrach is Shallan's mother. And I think we are starting to see that for real, like really get the confirmation, really get that. Because it's been danced around so much in these scenes that it's inevitable, right? However, I love what you said, Elliot, that what if this is her? I want to run with this ball so badly, but everything that I understand is that there's no time jump shenanigans in the Cosmere. There's no time travel or things like that, which I appreciate, because things could get way too out of hand, way too fast with how the Cosmere works if you started jumping time. But that would be pretty cool. Or if Chandoran, well, okay, here's the crazy theory, that one way or the other, either Chanarach, which this doesn't make sense, so I'm going to go with the one of these two options. Okay, here's your way that Shallan is Chanarach. Okay, Shallan, we have seen, is so like such a powerful and unique light weaver, right? That she is able to make she's able to make Radiant physical. That's how she fights Marais here, is Radiant makes Radiant physical again, right? And helps fight Marais. What if she is so powerful, so convoluted and whatever, so everything, that she actually created Chanarach thousands of years ago, and then has been in an eternal slumber since then, and then was awoken back in later on, kind of fit into her life, and it was so like disoriented and lost that she was essentially a child again, and was raised by herself, her own light weaving, made incarnate because of how powerful she was.
There's some big like Legends of Zelda vibes going on here, like Link. Wake up. Yeah. You've been asleep for thousands of years. Wake up.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's real. Or that's also how Light Song is going to get involved. We don't have all the pieces yet, It's going to get involved at some point. So, yeah.
It'd been too long since we mentioned Light Song.
So. Yeah, that's true. But in all seriousness, yes, Chanarach is Shallan's mother. I don't even understand how Chanarach got involved with Shallan's dad. I don't know. It doesn't seem like a match made in heaven to me, but they're all, it's all that's complicated. Their relationship status on Facebook absolutely is. It's complicated. So, you know.
A situationship.
Yeah. There's a lot to be discovered here. Does this also mean that, We don't really see anything with the other of her siblings, but if she is, which we're assuming so, if she is the daughter of Chanarach Herald, does that give her any inherent like investiture or things? We know she's been unique. That's my one question, is like, okay, if Balat becomes a Radiant, right? Is he going to be unique in whatever order he is, or maybe enhanced, or just like quicker, like more of a natural at it or something, because his mom's a herald?
He'd definitely get the Surge of Division if he were to become.
That's true. He'd use it to just rip apart. He'd be really good at ripping apart some crabs.
Exactly. Yeah. He'd be sitting back there without even touching them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Chanarach is the Dustbringer, right?
Yep.
That's true.
Yeah. Exactly.
Maybe he just thought he was ripping apart crabs, and in reality, it's his mom over his shoulder.
Yeah,
maybe. Mm-hmm. To answer your question seriously, I do think, I don't know if there's any powers that are genetically passed down, but she would have a unique connection, capital C, to the Herald Chanarach by being her daughter.
True. Yeah.
I don't know if that would be important at any point, but I think that would exist.
Yeah, I agree with that. I there's just so many one-off things with Shallan. Photographic memory is like a big deal. And it could just be she has a photographic memory.
It was a big deal in the first two books, and it hasn't been talked about since.
Yes. But it's still, in my head, it's still relevant. It's very like relevant to the part of her character and such, but yeah, you're right. It had way more relevance when she was making sketches and things.
Right.
And that could just be a part of her character. And that's great. That's cool. Cause that could be like a real thing, but that's also like a pretty extraordinary thing. And then obviously two sprint, like there's so many one-off things with Shallan. I expect as we go on, we will get more confirmation that Chanarach is Shallan's mother. I'm wondering if that is also going to come with a clarification of any of her outstanding qualities, her outstanding things. You know, she's quite unique.
All right, question for you guys. Yesterday in the book, we visited one of Relaine's old memories of the early Shattered Plains. Are we going to go visit a Shallan flashback again and really get a confirmation that of her mother now that we've brought it up?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's honestly, frankly, there's no doubt in my mind. Like, if we could redo our bingo boards right now, I would swap that in so fast. I think there's a 99% chance that we get maybe not even a full chapter, maybe a half chapter situation. I don't know how it'll be structured, but like distinct. Shallan is in the spiritual realm and is getting a flashback. Like she's walking through a scene and with her mother in some way that either confirms it or elaborates on it. I have my prediction on what I think that will be, but I feel like that might be, I don't know.
Now sleep, my baby dear.
Well, I don't think that's coming back. I don't know. I think it's going to be. This is something we've talked about on the podcast, so it's not like at a left field. But spoiler alert: if you don't know about the World Hopper Ball from Dragonsteel, but I think it's going to be. The scene, I think we're going to see behind the scenes more of Shallan's wedding. I think that's going to be put into the book. We're at Shallan and Adolin's wedding, that Chinaretch shows up in some way, shape, or form. And that's how it's really confirmed to us, is some way through that. I think that's going to be put into the book. I think that's what we're going to see.
Okay. I assumed that would be like a Dragonsteel unique thing, and if you were there then you got it. If not, I didn't think it'd be in the book, but you're right, it might be.
I do think we will get a scene where it's explicitly spelled out, if nothing else for the casual readers, because I do think it's possible that if you are casual and not following along with all the fan theories and podcasts and Reddit threads about the books, you could be this far and not have been reading closely enough to be convinced at this point of what we just talked about. And so there's probably still readers who need that reveal.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And it's still not explicitly spelled out by the end of this chapter. All it says is Shallan let herself see her and let herself cry about it. And that's all it says. So I assume that it's coming in the next couple chapters of that was my mom and then all the fallout from that. But it's just a matter of how we get that information. Anything else from the Herald scene? Oh, I actually had something. Dalinar in chapter 65 muses to himself, hey, we're swearing these ideals, and Dalinar is Kallak, I believe. And he thinks to himself, yeah, that oath I swore doesn't mean anything. Right? And then I was like, okay, I didn't think it did until you said that. Now I do. What do you guys think, it has any weight of him like joining the Oath Pact or something modern day?
I did question this for a while. I did key into this what you're talking about. I hate to say it, but I don't know. I think this is going to become something relevant, but it's either going to become something trivial where he is like, no, that wasn't real. It was a vision, but maybe he'll be tempted by it, or maybe Odium will try to like use that against him. Hypothetically, I don't know. Like, you swore an oath. He's like, no, that was just a dream or something. I don't know. I couldn't tell you where this is going to go, but he makes a very specific point, like you're saying, of like, oaths are the most important thing to me.
Right.
And I just said this oath out loud. Like I'm kind of a part of this now. And that, I don't know what to make of that.
He says, I mean, this isn't really me, but I would hold this up anyway if it were me. Like, I will hold back the darkness. I will, you know, fight for honor, whatever. He thinks to himself, yeah, I mean, I would do that if this really was binding, but it's not, right? So I didn't give it a second thought until Dalinar did.
The one reason that I'm inclined to maybe key into little nitpicky oaths is a line we got, I don't know, 400 pages ago or something like that, that really fixated on, well, if you want to take up the Shard of Honor, you really got to be big on your oaths. Or
yeah,
something along those lines of, well, honor takes every oath seriously. Something kind of hinting at that. And I think we've spun a little bit before on, well, what if the little things he says that he only kind of sort of means all of a sudden become important when he's trying to convince the shattered pieces of honor to reform and let him take them up. So could little things like this, where he stated an oath but was acting a part, so it didn't really matter, but maybe the Shard of Honor would take that seriously? I don't know. I don't know if that matters, but that's what I think of.
I always think back to that weird scene between him and the Mink, of him lending the Mink like 50 yes. Windrunners for the day, and yes. that being a big deal about holding up an oath. So it's going somewhere. I don't know where, but yeah.
Yeah, first time all three of us are in the dark. Usually Trevor knows and acts all smug.
Ooh, what if...
Those days are behind us, Paul.
Yeah, I know.
Here's a half-baked idea. It might even be quarter-baked. What if Dalinar takes up the Shard of Honor, loses the contest, is now in the service of Odium, but can't actually do the things that Odium wants because he's made these oaths along the way and he's now honor and bound by those things and has to act that way?
Okay.
Could that be a way that these oaths could be binding and important at the end of the day? Odium somehow has control, but all of a sudden finds out that he can't actually control Dalinar because Dalinar is honor and has made oaths and has to keep them.
Certainly half baked. You're not lying.
Yeah, or less than half.
I like it. My only question, I'm actually not questioning the logic of it. I think it checks out. I think the logic of it checks out. My question is, where does that go in the story? Are they just at an eternal stalemate, or
yeah,
just kind of like Odium's like, okay, well, I won't order you to do anything, but I'm just gonna do my thing now. I'm unsure. Another like kind of crazy twist with this is, what if Dalinar holds the Shard of Honor, goes to the contest, willingly dies, and somehow making Odium also get the Shard of Honor, so then he has to, which would be wild. So then he's living in this eternal state of, you know, passion driven response, but is bound by honor in a way, like puts it onto Taravangian rather than he himself being the one who's like locked into some oath or something. I don't think that checks out, but that's where my brain is.
You've heard of Todium. Now get ready for Hodium.
Yeah. Thodium.
Odionor?
Odionor.
We need a couple's name for Odium and Honor. All right.
No, we don't.
We don't? All right, no. Let us know in the comments what your couple's on name Odium. For Honor.
On Odium.
What your ship name is for Honor and Odium. Yeah, all right.
Need that.
Anything else, gentlemen?
That's all I got. I'm all out of half-baked ideas.
Okay. we can reconvene next week with chapters 66 through interlude 10. So thanks for joining me, Paul Knight.
See ya.
Looking forward to reading more. Toodles, everyone.